Goldblum.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff, Samantha Underwood. Your Honors, in this case, the administrative law judge engaged in a great deal of unfounded speculation. That speculation compromised the credibility assessment, which compromised the remainder of his decision, particularly with regard to the plaintiff's mental functional capacity and whether the mood disorder actually met the Appendix 1 listing of impairments. The administrative law judge also fails to explain why he discounts crucial parts of reports and testimony that he claims to credit. For example, Dr. Hilger, who is the doctor who examined the claimant on the behest of the Social Security Administration, reports an ability to work if her mood can be stabilized. Now, the administrative law judge on page 37 of the record states, given the claimant the benefit of the doubt, her mood has not been stabilized. So when you put that in conjunction with what Dr. Hilger actually says, this isn't someone who's able to work. And actually, when you look at the reports from every treating and examining source, you get a picture of someone who is not able to sustain substantial gainful activity. In addition, Dr. Marquez, who is the subject of a lot of controversy in this case in terms of his initial testimony and his amended testimony, but in his initial testimony, Dr. Marquez testified that there were moderate limitations in concentration, persistence, and pace. The ALJ indicates that he credits that initial testimony from Dr. Marquez, yet the administrative law judge only finds mild limitations in concentration, persistence, and pace, and doesn't explain how he makes that jump when he claims to credit Dr. Marquez's initial testimony. But getting into the heart of credibility here, the administrative law judge offers basically three different sections of rationale as to why he's finding this individual not credible. And I would pose that absolutely none of them reasonably support the credibility finding. And in fact, some of them, I think, are downright ridiculous. For instance, he says that he's not going to credit any of the testimony from the claimant's mother because instead of living in the trailer next door, she is living in the trailer two doors down. I honestly don't understand that. I mean, whether he's indicating that because she couldn't look in the windows, she didn't see what was going on, that also doesn't make any sense because the testimony here is that this is a woman who basically kept the shades of her trailer closed, so no one was going to see anything looking in. But the testimony from the claimant's mother is that she was there frequently. She, in fact, was there every day. She came first thing in the morning and woke the kids up and got them ready for school. Now, another factor that the judge uses to discount this individual's credibility is because of her supposed ability to take care of the children. Now, this court in Mendez made it pretty clear that if someone is taking care of their children, particularly with help, that's not a real valid reason to discount their credibility, particularly in a case of a mental impairment, which is what this case is. And then the ALJ says, well, there's all these inconsistencies in the record, and because of these inconsistencies, particularly in terms of how she presents her symptoms to different treaters, she's not credible. The problem is that in doing so, the ALJ doesn't seem to appreciate the nature of this individual's mental impairments. She has mental impairments that their symptoms wax and wane. She has been found to be bipolar. So there's times, I think she testified that she, in a year period, she may have 20 up days, or the up periods may even be 3 or 4 hours, but then she's mostly depressed. She also testified, though, that there were times where she would be in the psychiatrist's office and she'd be feeling up, but it doesn't last. This court's decision in Cangale, I think, is very instructive. In Cangale, the court explained that particularly with bipolar disorders and other mental impairments, symptoms wax and wane. And the fact that a psychiatrist or a mental health professional may indicate that someone is doing okay on a certain occasion doesn't mean that the overall mental health.
There's a more sharp break in the reporting here that the ALJ found significant and is, I think, your main problem on appeal, and that is that there's medical records from 2001, and they paint one picture from 2001 to 2005, and then she switches doctors, and there's a sharp uptick in the emphasis on symptoms and also discrepancies in her reporting of symptoms that predated that 2005 shift. In particular, she reports after 2005 that before 2005 she was experiencing a year and a half of full-blown manic episodes that she never once reported during that 2001 to 2005 period, which is a significant red flag suggesting exaggeration here. And I think that's the main issue on appeal.
You know, I don't think it's actually quite that black and white. First of all, and again, part of it I think is the way this individual expresses herself, but if you go back to Dr. Hare's reports in July of 2003, Dr. Hare reports that there's suicidal thoughts, there's severe mood swings. The severe mood swings, in addition to difficulty sleeping, racing thoughts, frequent crying, that's page 261, 265 of the record. And in fact, you know, the racing thoughts, the severe mood swings, that's all consistent. Things were so bad at that point that even though she was pregnant, Dr. Hare made sure that she was being prescribed Zoloft. Dr. Fields, again, in 2003, he examines her and August of 2003 reports a GAF of 30. In September of 2003, he reports a GAF of 45. And that's some very, very significant symptoms. Now, I know the administrative law judge was focused on a report from Dr. Black from 2005, and he seemed to indicate that everything was so inflated it had to have been exaggerated, and notes that at that point she had sought out an attorney to help her with her claim for disability. Now, when I read that report from Dr. Black, it didn't necessarily appear to me that, for instance, when there was a reference to ADHD and multiple personality disorder, I didn't get the feeling that that was actually coming from the claimant, but that this was Dr. Black, I think, had had some correspondence with the attorney. And my sense is that the attorney, being a layperson, talks to the client, and maybe she's rapid and on a high one day and then talks to her the next and she's severely depressed. And as a layperson thinks, I'm talking to two different people. So when he's talking, when he's conversing or corresponding with Dr. Black, says, hey, you know, maybe you should check out whether there's a multiple personality disorder involved. And her concentration isn't so good. Maybe you should check out ADHD. But the thing is, when you look at what Dr. Black actually found, his report was consistent with Dr. Hare, with Dr. Fields, with Dr. Hilger, and Dr. Ramirez. Every one of the treating and examining mental health specialists writes a report that makes it pretty clear that this isn't an individual who's going to be able to sustain substantial gainful activity on a regular and continuing basis.
Well, prior to that 2005 date, though, the symptoms were controlled fairly well with medication, as I understand the record. Didn't she report on regular occasions that she seemed to be responding well to the medication?
Well, I mean, there were, I mean, from time to time it would, but then, for instance, let's see. In 2004, Dr. Fields reports decreased energy, decreased concentration. Throughout 2003, again, I think it's what I'm getting when I look at the record and not just looking at some isolated notes is that, and like a lot of bipolar individuals, she would take the medication, it would be stabilized for a little bit, but it didn't last. And then she would come in and there would be questions and I don't think there's any question that maybe things got worse. But the ALJ doesn't parse things out to say, well, maybe I should have found a later onset date. He just says she's not credible, and I'm finding her not credible. I'm rejecting all of the treating and examining source opinions, and it's not supported by medical evidence of record, and we believe there's legal error.
How many places did she live during this time?
I think from the time she filed the application in 2003, she was living in the trailer.
And well, there was some mention of her living with a boyfriend.
At one point she did, and he threw her out, and then the mother let her come back to the trailer. And, again, she also, the only job she was able to keep for more than 3 or 4 months was back when she was in high school. Since that time, every job was lost, either because she didn't concentrate or because she had fights with supervisors or coworkers, which, again, seems to show a pretty marked limitation in her ability to sustain social functioning on the workplace.
Thank you, Ms. Goldman. Freiberg.
May it please the Court, Cynthia Freiberg, on behalf of Michael Astrew, Commissioner of Social Security. Judge Sykes hit the nail on the head this morning. The ALJ reasonably thought it was significant that when Ms. Underwood presented to Dr. Black, she presented with symptoms that she had never mentioned to any treater previously. For example, she told Dr. and this is about a month after she obtains an attorney, it seems like counsel was doing the speculating here when she suggested Dr. Black had communication with Underwood's attorney about this evaluation, because there's absolutely no evidence in the record that Dr. Black was communicating with Underwood's attorney at the time. Underwood presents to him, says her attorney wants consideration of her having multiple personality disorder. There was no mention of that previously. And Dr. Black didn't even go into the symptoms of multiple personality disorder at the time. She describes full-blown manic attacks, going periods of 3 or 4 days without sleep, racing thoughts. While there was a notation of racing thoughts to Dr. Hare back in 2003 that appeared to be prior to her starting any medication, because at that time Dr. Hare indicated started Zoloft, increased it 1 month later in August, when Underwood returned to Dr. Hare in September, said things are much better now, she was coping with her pregnancy, and she felt good. And even back to Dr. Black's initial evaluation with this extreme presentation of symptoms, This was all Underwood's self-report, because even the objective findings of Dr. Black during that evaluation were not that extreme. He said she was cooperative and friendly when she got comfortable, no involuntary movements, voice was of normal tone and volume, good articulation, positive affect, mood was presently euthymic, no pressure to speech, no racing thoughts. This was all Underwood's presentation, basically giving him her own history. He even says she has no symptoms presently. She felt her mood stabilizers had been helpful. This is at transcript page 327. She told him she had severe difficulties in sleeping, but currently, again, says her medication is helpful. She was alert and oriented, fully oriented. Given this initial evaluation by Dr. Black, considered in its entirety, along with the previous notes, the ALJ could reasonably discount her extreme presentation and find that to be a factor in finding Underwood not credible in her allegations of disabling mental symptoms. Further, later treatment notes from Dr. Black also bear this out. Although when she returns in February, she says she's down and depressed. She explains that that's because she's facing some laser surgery. Her daughter's getting ear tubes. She also tells him being a single parent of three children is quite difficult. And then Dr. Black specifically notes, in other respects, she is doing fine, taking care of her three children, getting along with her parents. Although his objective findings, this is at transfer page 333-34, he notes on objective findings that she's definitely very sad. Her form of thought was sluggish, but it was linear and goal-directed. There was some psychomotor retardation, but she denied any psychotic symptoms, denied suicidal ideation. He noted her judgment and impulse control were adequate. She was working hard in therapy, and he assessed that she was able to take care of her children. And in keeping Ms. Underwood's case in context, her counseling with Carrie Roller, I think, gives an understanding of the difficulties she's facing with her children. She's a single parent of three children, and at least two of her children have difficulties with bipolar disorder and possibly ADHD. So, granted, this woman has her hands full taking care of her children. Her mother helps her, but that doesn't mean that her mental impairment is disabling. Because her children, she's in a very stressful situation. And related to that is the credibility finding that counsel discussed. The ALJ did note that Ms. Underwood's mother lived two trailers down, but more persuasively, the ALJ also noted that Brenda Scott, Ms. Underwood's mother, testified that she works full-time. She was asked what her shift was. She said anywhere from 6 a.m. to midnight to 6 a.m. And she stated, I work 24 hours a day. So her mother's working full time. And granted, she helps her daughter with her children, but she's clearly not there 24 hours a day. And in fact, I believe that her mother testified she sees her two or three times a day, I believe she said for about an hour. And also the ALJ discounted Ms. Underwood's testimony because she could take care of her children. As I previously stated, she's in a challenging situation with her three children. He also noted that DCFS had not stepped in to take custody of her children, which was an important finding because DCFS had stepped in at one point, but they left the children with Ms. Underwood. They did not find cause to take her children away. And additionally, getting back to Dr. Black, in May of 2005, he explained to Ms. Underwood that there's obligations of different treating providers and their mandated obligations to report unsafe behavior to DCFS. And that is at transcript page 330 to 331. But then he concludes that she's not a danger to her children or other people, and there's no need for any report at that time. She's having a lot of difficulties with her children, but none that mandated reporting to DCFS. That was another factor that ALJ reasonably considered. He also reasonably considered her various inconsistent reports to different mental health providers. Counsel argues that this is a classic example of symptoms waxing and waning. But these aren't her symptoms that are waxing and waning. These are her reports. She gave inconsistent reports regarding prior psychiatric hospitalizations. inconsistent reports about her illicit drug use. And the ALJ could reasonably consider this and conclude that she's not a reliable reporter of her own history. She's not credible. You can't believe her because she's telling different things to different providers. How do you know what is actually going on unless you're looking at the records and then you look at the objective findings, some of which I've read out loud, and they really don't depict a disabled individual. Regarding her work history, counsel asserts that she quit work due to lack of concentration and fights with others. Yet the record shows that she told a counselor, a C. Goldberg, that she was working at a gas station and quit in August of 2003 because her gynecologist recommended it. Similarly, she told Carrie Roller that she was pregnant and kept getting sick all the time, so she quit her job. She told Carrie Roller that she quit another job because it was, quote, boring as hell. That's at transcript page 387. She also told Dr. Hilger that she quit due to morning sickness when she was pregnant with her last child. And she did also say due to conflict with her boss, but she told three different people that she quit due to problems with pregnancy or morning sickness. So it's reasonable to conclude that that played some role in her problematic work history. If there are no other questions, the commissioner will rest on the brief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goldberg, I'll give you one additional minute.
Just very quickly, I think, as the Mendez case makes very clear, an ability to take care of one's kids is not a reason to detract from credibility. Second of all, looking at some of the progress notes, in February of 2005, Dr. Black reports her affect is definitely very sad. And at that time, she was thinking about transferring over her children to the CRCC. At page 333 of the record, May of 2005, Dr. Black reports, and these are objective findings, that very irritable, labile affect today, very rude and unhappy. And again, that goes to her social functioning. In September of 2005, at page 338, he reports that she's tearful. She has a depressed mood. Again, these are his objective findings. Her form of thought is easily distracted, mood tearful, occasionally suicidal. And I would also add that the fact that one of her jobs ended because of the pregnancy doesn't distinguish the fact that she had, and again, this is very, very classic with people with the bipolar, they have a multitude of jobs. One of them she may have left because of pregnancy and morning sickness, but a slew of them were left because she wasn't concentrating and had problems dealing with supervisors. We're going to ask that this case be remanded. We thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.